This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Ruhib, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
What we found was that the situation was much more profound than we had thought, and how soldiers from the Ugandan People's Defense Force, the Ugandan military, seem to have really targeted some of the town's poorest women and girls, and who had no choice but to accept to enter relationships in exchange for food and for money.
That's Louis Mudge of Human Rights Watch talking about allegations of sexual abuse against Ugandan soldiers in Central African Republic. Details coming up.
Also, heavy gunfire was reported today in Abidjan and Bouake as ex-rebel soldiers in Ivory Coast continue their mutiny. And UN Refugee Agency Chief Filippo Grandi says humanitarian conditions in South Sudan are driving people from their homes in record numbers.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story: in Ivory Coast, heavy gunfire was reported today in Abidjan and Bouake as ex-rebel soldiers continue their mutiny for a fourth day. The former rebels are demanding they be paid long overdue bonuses by the government. They often fire their weapons in the air to express their anger. However, AFP reports at least one person was killed yesterday in Bouake. Under a deal reached in January after a previous mutiny, former rebels were to be given an immediate partial payment, with the rest to be paid this month. The government has not been able to do that. Reuters quotes the former rebels as saying, "We want the money. There's nothing to discuss." The Ivorian Armed Forces Chief of Staff issued a statement yesterday saying a military operation was underway to reestablish order. He also went on TV to appeal to the soldiers to return to their barracks. The government denies it is holding formal negotiations with the ex-rebels.
UN agencies have raised their estimates of how much money is needed to help the nearly 2 million refugees who fled South Sudan. The UNHCR and the World Food Programme say $1.4 billion is needed this year, an increase from $1.2 billion. So far, only 14% of the appeal has been funded. AFP quotes UN Refugee Agency Chief Filippo Grandi as saying humanitarian conditions in South Sudan are driving people from their homes in record numbers. Besides the 2 million people who fled to neighboring countries, about 1 million are displaced within South Sudan.
In South Africa today, the Constitutional Court heard arguments on whether the upcoming parliamentary vote of no confidence against President Jacob Zuma should be a secret ballot. The court's ruling could have political consequences. For VOA, Tuso Kamalo reports from Johannesburg.
Lawyers representing the opposition parties argued in favor of their petition before a full bench of the Constitutional Court in Johannesburg. Geoff Butlender is a legal representative of the opposition.
The core submission is that the function of the court is to create the conditions in which members of the National Assembly can carry out their constitutional duty of oversight, and that the only way to create that condition is to allow a secret ballot. The fear is that if there's an open ballot, you will be expelled from the party and expelled from Parliament through that mechanism. That's why there needs to be a secret ballot.
Lawyers representing President Jacob Zuma and the Speaker of Parliament countered that no-confidence votes have never taken place in secret. They argued the Constitution does not allow the courts to tell Parliament how to conduct its business. Outside the court, members of other opposition parties, civil society organizations, and religious groups demonstrated in support of a secret ballot. Zuma has faced mounting criticism following several corruption scandals in the past year and a controversial cabinet reorganization last month. Members of his ruling coalition have been among those calling on him to step down. While the questions before the Constitutional Court are legal, the stakes are highly political. The opposition needs to garner a two-thirds majority in parliament to vote Zuma out. To get it, the opposition would need some ANC lawmakers to break ranks. The ruling African National Congress has already instructed its MPs to back Zuma. Speaking to reporters last month, ANC Secretary General Gwete Mantashe said a secret ballot will not change the way the ANC lawmakers vote.
There will be no ANC member who will vote in either way for a motion of the opposition. We are members of the ANC in a party political system and we will not vote against the ANC.
Once the court delivers its judgment on how the vote can be conducted, Parliament is expected to set a date to consider the motion of no confidence. Zuma's second elected mandate does not expire until 2019. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The World Health Organization is weighing whether to administer a new Ebola vaccine for an outbreak in a remote area of the DRC. Reuters reports that the Gavi Global Vaccine Alliance has about 300,000 doses available of a vaccine developed by Merck. The last report, 3 people have died among the 19 suspected and confirmed cases. WHO experts are on the scene trying to determine the extent of the Ebola outbreak and whether the vaccine is needed to control its spread. Reuters reports DRC health officials are trying to trace 125 people thought to be linked to cases in the northeastern province of Baswell, near the border with Central African Republic.
The group Human Rights Watch has accused Ugandan troops in Central African Republic of sexually exploiting or abusing at least 13 women and girls since 2015. It's calling for Ugandan and African Union authorities to conduct investigations and punish those responsible. Ugandan troops have started to withdraw from CAR after first being deployed in 2009 to track down LRA rebels. HRW says it notified the Ugandan government of its allegations on April 20th, but is yet to receive a response. Lewis Mudge is the Africa researcher at Human Rights Watch. From the Rwandan capital, Kigali, he spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua.
We effectuated a mission to the southeast of the Central African Republic over the last couple months to a town called Obo, which was the base of the Ugandan and American effort to combat the LRA in the region. And we had gone out there because we'd known for quite some time, we'd heard rumors of cases of sexual exploitation and abuse. So that means basically soldiers taking advantage of women and girls in very vulnerable situations and exchanging sex for food and money. And when the Ugandans and the American forces had announced that they were going to withdraw from the region, we decided to go out there and really try to understand what was happening to get to the real crux of the matter. And what we found was that the situation was much more profound than we had thought, and how soldiers from the Ugandan People's Defense Force, the Ugandan military, seemed to have really targeted some of the town's poorest women and girls, and who had no choice but to accept to enter relationships in exchange for food and for money, sexual relationships. We also recorded one rape case and heard testimony of several others, and we've seen confidential UN reports of cases of rape.
The cases that Human Rights Watch mentions, are these the same as those reported in 2016 by the UN Office of the High Commissioner of Human Rights?
So the UN Office of the High Commissioner of Human Rights announced some cases publicly in 2016. They also had a confidential report that was written in 2016 that we got access to. And there's some degree of crossover. Of the UN cases and Human Rights Watch's cases, there's 4 cases which were shared by both organizations. That means that 12 other cases that we had found had not been found by the UN, and dozens of other cases found by the UN had not been found by Human Rights Watch. And more importantly, the people we spoke to, they all told us without hesitation, and they were all unequivocal, that this is much deeper than we had thought, and that it would take us weeks and weeks of staying in Obo to ascertain how much of an issue this really was.
Now, you want the Ugandan government and the African Union to investigate, is that correct?
Absolutely. The African Union is the body which put this counter Lord's Resistance Army mission in place, and they certainly bear some degree of responsibility for crimes and abuses that have committed by soldiers that are operating under its umbrella. The African Union to date does not have a very coherent policy on sexual exploitation and abuse committed by either African Union peacekeepers or African Union forces.
Can you give us an idea of where these abuses allegedly took place? Did they take place in the village itself, on military bases? Do you know?
Yeah, we asked women and girls this question. This happened in the neighborhoods. The men would come down in broad daylight, sometimes in uniform, sometimes not in uniform. They had no shame and no problems in sort of going to their local wives' home. But more worryingly, a lot of this happened on the actual Ugandan base. And many of these women and girls that we spoke to told us that they openly would go into the base and that this is completely normal and that the guards knew that they were the local wives of certain soldiers. Many of them knew of several other women and girls who had done the exact same thing.
Why did these women and girls go to the military base?
We're talking about one of the poorest countries in the world. This is a corner of a country that has just seen way too much conflict over the last few years. And unsurprisingly, that results in incredibly vulnerable people being displaced. Many of the women and girls that we spoke to are not originally from Obo. They had been displaced by fighting. They had lost family members. And these are women and girls who live off of literally pennies a day. And they all told me that none of them wanted to engage in these type of relationships. They felt forced to do it because the men would offer them money and food, and they had nothing to eat or nothing to feed their other children. It was a matter of survival.
Louis Mudge is the Africa researcher at Human Rights Watch. From the Rwandan capital, Kigali, he spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua.
The UN warns an infestation of fall armyworms is spreading across East Africa. In Kenya, the caterpillars have affected key maize and wheat crops in Western and Rift Valley counties. There are also unconfirmed reports that armyworms have been found in eastern and coastal areas of Kenya. In Uganda, the UN says the fall armyworm has attacked 54 out of 116 districts and is spreading quickly. And in Ethiopia, pests have attacked crops in parts of the southwestern zones of Benchmaji, Kaffa, and Shika. Fall armyworms have added to food insecurity in the region due to drought. The UN says more than 13.5 million people in Somalia, Ethiopia, and Kenya face crisis or emergency levels of food insecurity. That's an increase of 2.5 million more than April.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 19 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Heavy gunfire was reported today in Abidjan and Bouake as ex-rebel soldiers in Ivory Coast continue their mutiny for a fourth day. UN Refugee Agency Chief Filippo Grandi says humanitarian conditions in South Sudan are driving people from their homes in record numbers. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Germany and Italy are calling for an EU mission to be deployed on the border between Libya and Niger to stem the flow of migrant crossings into Europe. In a letter obtained by the AFP news agency, German and Italian officials say more must be done to stop hundreds of thousands of people from risking their lives by crossing the Mediterranean and by hiring people smugglers who often abandon them at sea. Italy has registered more than 42,500 migrants this year, with the majority coming from Libya. From Rome, reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about this and other migrant developments.
Well, as we know, the Italian government and other EU countries are very concerned about the flow of migrants that are coming from sub-Saharan Africa, moving through Libya and crossing the Mediterranean, coming into Europe. And this has been a priority in particular for the Italian government to try and reach agreement with individual governments in Africa to try and stem the flow of migrants. And now we're seeing media reports suggesting that the German and Italian interior ministers have sent a letter to the European Commission of the EU asking or saying that they are convinced that more must be done to prevent the hundreds of thousands of people crossing through Libya and then the Mediterranean in the hands of smugglers.
Are they offering any type of alternative for the migrants? Because the reason that they're fleeing, either they're wanting work or they're fleeing from conflict in their countries.
It seems that these ministers are really looking to try and strengthen support for growth and development programs. Now, this is not the first time we've heard this. Italy has been talking about this in countries like Nigeria, Niger, and other countries. And now we're seeing, again, this talk of trying to support local growth, development programs along the border area, provide technical and financial support for Libyan authorities fighting illegal migration in that border area. And just a short time ago, about a month or two back, the Italian government also sought to reach agreement with some of the tribes in that border region to try and stop the flow of migrants into Libya.
And another aspect of this story, in looking at one of the largest migrant reception centers there in Italy, was in the hands of a mafia clan for 10 years. So how was this discovered, and what really does this mean for migrants?
Well, police have been monitoring the situation for some time, and 500 police arrested around 68 people early Monday in a huge operation. They are alleged to be members of the Arena clan, part of the powerful Calabrian mafia known as 'Ndrangheta, and this clan is alleged to have made millions of dollars through its involvement in the running of this migrant reception center in Calabria, one of the largest in Italy. And this clan is alleged to have creamed money off the top, really made more than $100 million since 2006, because they were taking these funds to run this migrant center, and unfortunately the migrants weren't necessarily getting all the benefits that they were promised. This is really a significant breakthrough, I think, for the police, and I'm wondering if we're going to see more revelations regarding the operations of other migrant centres in Italy, because, as you can see, it's quite a money-making operation. These centres taking money from the Italian government or EU funds to run these centres that are often not up to the standards that really should be expected for human rights and the protection of migrants coming into Italy.
That was Josephine McKenna in Rome.
Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza recently set up a 15-member commission to amend the country's constitution. This comes after the National Dialogue Commission presented a report to the president calling for the removal of presidential term limits. Moses Havyarimana reports from Bujumbura.
According to the Dialogue Commission report, a majority of Burundians have called for the scrapping of the term limits and that they want the incumbent president to run again in the 2020 general election. Violence erupted in Burundi in April of 2015 when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek for another term in the office, which critics called unconstitutional. Justin Zoisaba is the chairman of the National Dialogue Commission.
People wanted to review amendment of the constitution. Most of the people who talk, they say there is a need of amendment. But another group say no, we have not to revise. Majority is the one who want the amendment.
Burundi last amended the constitution in 2005. When Nkurunziza took office after a transitional government that was led by Domitien Ndayizeye. Article 96 of the country's constitution says the Burundi president is elected directly by the citizens for not more than 2 5-year terms. The National Dialogue Commission was set up by President Pierre Nkurunziza in 2015. Opposition leaders say that this was just a setup by the Burundi government to scrap the term limits. Main opposition leader Agathon Rwasa is the deputy speaker of the parliament.
And if one could say, yes, let's change our constitution, I think the term is not the problem. The problem is the governance. How do we guarantee that throughout our constitution, good governance is really focused on, and there are mechanisms of monitoring to see that we succeed in that exercise?
A constitution amendment remains key priority for President Nkurunziza's government after failing to pass the bill in 2015 in the parliament. The president last week appointed a 15-member commission that will be in charge of reviewing the country's constitution. More than 500 people have been killed in violence in Burundi since April 2015, and hundreds of thousands have fled to neighboring countries. The Regional Mediated Peace Dialogue Commission has failed so far to find a long-term solution for Burundi after 2 years of talks. The Burundi government says it will not talk to those it accuses of taking part in a failed coup in 2015. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Dan Crafton, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
I'm Lina Ormudu, host of Health Chat. Do you have trouble sleeping? Well, join us this Tuesday as we take a look at sleep deprivation and how to address it with our guest, Dr. Ken Redcross, internal medicine specialist and concierge doctor. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, what does the future hold for Liberia? Who will lead the West African nation when President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf leaves office in October at the end of her second term? 2 million Liberians have registered to vote, and nearly half of those are women. What's at stake in Liberia? On the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, Africa. This is James Brotte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.